Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Dean Sykes on bringing hope to a generation struggling with identity, purpose, and the weight of mental health.
On the outside, I was terribly confident to the point of arrogant. I mean, I was the president of the pep club, editor of the newspaper, stage managed all the productions, heavily involved, dating lots of girls. Just, I mean, to look at it, it looked like my life was perfect. I mean, everything was great. On the inside, every day I woke up going, I got to get through today somehow.
Dean Sykes next. On today's His People, we're joined by author and speaker Dean Sykes, founder of the You Matter Movement. Since 1993, Dean has shared messages of hope with millions of students through high school assemblies, teen challenge centers, and prisons across the U.S. and abroad. His heart for helping young people find purpose and value has shaped a ministry that reaches tens of thousands every year through live events, books, and television. Today, Dean joins Sonny Cain to talk about his book, You Matter, and how understanding our God-given worth can help bring hope and healing to a generation in crisis.
Well, Dean, I want to welcome you to His People.
Thank you so much, and I'm glad to be with you today.
Well, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started working in the trenches with teens.
Yeah, I have been now speaking with high school students since January 1st, 1993. The high school seniors that I spoke with in 93, I'm now speaking with their high school seniors.
Oh, wow.
It's become generational, and this was nothing on my radar screen. This was not where I was heading in life. I was going into politics, or at least that's what I thought. And I had a game plan, had a polling data, had people, had some resources, and we were going to run. But my life took some changes along the way, and I call them defining moments. I think we all have them in our lives. And for me, my first defining moment happened when I was 7 years old, when I became a Christian. I vividly remember the day. It was a Saturday afternoon. It was about 3:30. I know right where I was at 6404 Julie Lane, Chattanooga, Tennessee. I remember the pastor who came. I knelt down, prayed a prayer, and Jesus came into my heart. I mean, I knew something had changed. Defining moment number two, 15, I was sexually abused by a so-called Christian at a church. And 60 seconds changed the trajectory of my entire life. And I made a vow, I will never, ever tell anyone what just happened to me. And for 22 years, I didn't. Defining moment number three, I failed PE in high school, the easiest class you'll ever take. I failed, even though I played quarterback, taught tennis, and played golf. I was plenty athletic. I wasn't going to put myself in a position to get hurt again. Defining number four would be at 21 years old, the defining moment in my life outside of salvation, I prayed a prayer. I'd been in church my entire life. Every time the doors were open, I was there. Not because I wanted to be there, it was just the right thing to do. Growing up in the southeastern region of the United States where there's a church on every corner, that's just what we did. But I would not have known God from Adam. I knew about him, but I didn't know him. And so one day, I was in real estate development, 21 years old, right before launching into politics, and I had everything society says makes you successful, and I was miserable. I went to this God I didn't know, and I said, if you're real, and I don't think you are, but if you are, prove it. I tell teenagers every day, don't ever ask God, the creator of the universe, to prove to you that he's real unless you're ready. And 2 weeks come and go, there was zero faith attached to my prayer. I forgot I prayed that prayer. It was a beautiful March afternoon. The sun was shining, the wind was blowing. I walked into my office, said hello to our receptionist, walked down a long hall, turned right, walked into my office, shut my door, sat down, was dialing a phone, checking on a shopping center we had just built in Beckley, West Virginia. And suddenly, all I can tell you is behind me, off to my left, I heard someone say, call mom. I swung around in my chair, saw no one, but the hair on the back of my ear knew to call my mom, and I did. And when I called her, she was attempting suicide. In that instant, I believe with everything within me, God spoke to me. And people go, well, you must be so spiritual. No, I was just that unspiritual. God had to meet me where I was. And for me, he knew I had to hear something audibly to be able to respond to something. And I remember when I was growing up, there was a lady named Dilly Jenkins, and she says, Dean, this was when I was about 10 or 11 years old. She says, Dean, I believe God's going to use you in ministry one day, and I had no idea what that meant. She said, I think my job is to help teach you the word of God. So for every scripture you memorize, I'm giving you $10. I was like, I'm in.
Yeah.
And so I learned a lot of scripture. Interestingly, though, the word never returns void. Driving from my office that day to my parents' home, all those scriptures that Dilly Jenkins had taught me 11 years earlier, 10 or 11 years earlier, came out of my heart through my mouth. I began to speak the word. And I got to my parents' home, and from the outside in, their home looked fine. It was probably safe, secure, like where you and I live today. But from the inside out, my mom was dying. I have spoken with over 2.5 million people at live events. Just seen multiplied hundreds of thousands of people who from the outside in appear to have it all together, but from the inside out, they're in their own private wars. That day I beat on the door. My mom was barely alive. She fell into my arms. I picked her up. I carried her to her car. I drove her to a hospital. And as we drove, she says, "Dean, I can't be dying." And I said, "Mom, you're not going to die, but you're going to have to choose to live." And the most important word in that sentence is not live. It is choose.
Yeah.
Because the word teaches us, choose you this day who you're going to serve. I get her to a hospital. The doctors throw me against the wall, rush her to the ER. 45 minutes later, this doctor who had 4 years of college, 4 years of med school, 2 years of residency, and years of practicing medicine, walked over to my dad and I, and he said this to my dad, "Mr. Sykes, there is no medical reason whatsoever to tell you what I'm getting ready to tell you. It's a miracle of God. Your wife is alive. She's fine. Go see her." I heard miracle of God. Sonny, I went, "You've got to be kidding me. You're real?" I mean, it floored me and freaked me out simultaneously. My dad said, "Do you want to go see your mom?" I said, "No, sir." He goes, "I understand." I thought, "No, you don't. 2.5 hours ago, I'm minding my own business, and apparently the creator of the universe, who apparently is real, spoke to me. I heard his audible voice to call my mom, your wife. I did. She's literally ending her life. Get her to a hospital. This doctor just told us that he didn't save her, that God did. No, Dad, I'm going for a walk." And I went for a walk by myself, and I leaned against this long corridor of Park Ridge Hospital. "I could take you to the spot today. And all I can tell you is I had the most amazing encounter with Jesus." Mm-hmm. From the top of my head to the soles of my feet, the warmest oil-like substance hit me. I didn't hear his audibly voice, but I heard him speak to my heart, "I've called you." I said, "Well, what does that mean?" "So you're going to come work with me." "Well, unless that includes politics," the answer is no, I'm not doing that. Well, that didn't last too long. And shortly thereafter, I began this journey. And now I've spoken at over 4,300 events, 8 countries, written 33 books. In the last 27 months, we've had 169 million views of our videos on social media. We've never charged anyone anything. That was the mandate the Lord gave me, never charge anyone anything and stay out of debt. 4,300 plus events we've never charged, and our ministry is totally debt-free. And we get up every day and we get to do this. I mean, I haven't had a job since I was 26 years old.
Wow. I mean, such an incredible story there. There is so much there of just imagining the healing hand of God that has had to encounter you in some of those moments of your story. And just the shock of what you walked through with not only the experience with God, but also what your mother was walking through. Mm-hmm. I really can't fathom what you have carried. Now, how did these events, these defining moments, what do you think it is about them that drew your heart to teenagers specifically?
Yeah, my drug of choice after I'd been abused was lying. I lied more than I ever told the truth. In fact, I lied so much, people had to catch me telling the truth. I mean, it was just, that was my life. And why? The second greatest commandment in the Word teaches us, love your neighbor as yourself. If I don't love me, I can't love you. I can't give someone I don't have, something I don't have. I can't teach what I've not been taught. So for me, the most terrifying 25 minutes of my day, Monday through Friday, was when I walked into lunch because I was bullied. But yet, on the outside, I was terribly confident to the point of arrogant. I was the president of the pep club, editor of the newspaper, stage managed all the productions, heavily involved, dating lots of girls. Just, I mean, to look at it, it looked like my life was perfect. I mean, everything was great. On the inside, every day, I woke up going, I got to get through today somehow. And I began to realize, once I started speaking, when I would share my story, all these students would come up to me afterwards. They go, "I know exactly what you're feeling. That's what you said is my story." And I began to really unpack it. And one of the most powerful lessons I think that the Spirit of God's ever taught me is this: what you and I overcome in life will oftentimes become our platform.
Mm.
What we overcome becomes our platform. What did I say when I was 15? I'll never tell anybody what happened to me. And for 22 years, I didn't. But if you and I don't deal with our emotions will eventually deal with us. They don't just magically disappear. God created emotions for a reason. And so on this particular day, 22 years later, my wife asked me to go to Home Depot. Now, if we knew each other, you'd be laughing hysterically because I'm not a fixer-up guy. I don't know how to do that stuff. It's just not my world. But I said, you know, sure. So I took 2 of our 3 kids and we went to Home Depot. We walked down aisle 21, I turned right, and I walked literally right into the person who had sexually abused me.
Oh.
My life unraveled. I mean, I was reaching 250 million with a B every time I went on television to share my story. Massive, massive audiences. I couldn't function. I squeezed both of my kids' hands so tightly, they both shouted, "Dad." I turned around, went home. My wife looked at me, she says, "What in the world?" I said, "Not right now." Later that night, I invited her out to our front porch, and I said, "I've never had the guts to tell you anyone what I'm getting ready to tell you. 22 years ago, sexually abused. Tonight, 2 hours ago, I ran into the person for the first time." I'll never forget seeing her eyes filled with tears. She took 2 steps back, when she says, "Dean, everything makes sense, honey. We've got to get you help." I said, "I'm good." She says, "No, you're not." I said, "Lori, I'm not going to counseling." She goes, "If you've been given a report that you were really, really sick, would you go to a doctor, or would you just say you got faith?" I go, "I do both." She goes, "Great, we're going to counseling." And I was adamantly against it. I didn't believe in it until I began a conversation with a Christian counselor who said to me, "I know who you are. I'm not interested in what you do. I'm not interested in your ministry. I don't care about your results. I don't want to hear any of your stories from the road. I'm interested in you, the person." And that was new. And I'm like, I even said, "Why?" He goes, "Dean, you matter to God." Oh, there's those two words, "you matter." And so that conversation began and lasted 11 years. In my phone and on my iPad, I carry 11 years worth of notes. And here's kind of the takeaway. This is why I wrote this book. I was asked this question during those 11 years. "Will you forgive the person who hurt you when you were 15? My immediate response as a strong, you know, Christian, "No, not even maybe." Why? I said, "It's not fair. I did nothing wrong." Then the question that changed my life, "Was the cross fair?" Took me 3 days. I wasn't going to lie to God, because Ananias and Sapphira lied to God. They both dropped dead. I wasn't going to do that. So I just got around by myself, and I prayed, and I did what I needed to do. And I said, "God, do I have to go to the person?" "No, bring it to me." And so I did not go to the person, but I brought it to God, and I forgave. And I would love to tell you, Sonny, that in that moment, angels did high fives in my office. There was shouting in heaven. I mean, I felt worse. I felt so stupid. Because here's what I've learned. Faith isn't about feelings. Faith is about obedience. And I did forgive. Nothing happened inside of me for months. But one morning, I woke up. And what that counselor told me, he said, "Dean, if you'll forgive, you'll get free." I woke up one morning totally, completely free. And I tell students every day, I say, you know, you could walk, that person who sexually abused me could walk into this arena, into this high school auditorium, this cafeteria, wherever I'm speaking, they could walk down to the front of that room, sit right directly in front of me, would not faze me in the least. Here's what's interesting. Every day of the year, whether on social media, whether on podcasts, whether through one of my books, or on television, or at our events, every single day of the year, somebody hears the story of how I've been sexually abused. The thing I said I'll never tell is heard by millions of people a year. Not because it's such a great story, because it's so relatable.
Yeah.
So that's why I do what I do. I get people to understand that your life matters. Not because of the money you have, not because of what you've accomplished, not because of your last name, not because of how great you are, how great looking you are. You matter for one reason. It's found in 16 words in Job 33, verse 4, "The Spirit of God made you, and the breath of the Almighty gives you life." You matter for one reason. You're breathing.
Just beautiful. And while we're here to talk about teens, I can't skip over just this. You know, I think sometimes as Christians, we think that forgiveness is just this, you know, one and done, like simple thing that we say. But what I heard tucked underneath that was it was an 11-year journey where you were also partnering with God and a counselor in doing work in order to get free.
Yeah. I would not have gotten there on my own. I wasn't there. The only way that you and I can share love with someone else or receive love from someone else, in my view, is because we're created in the image of God. And God doesn't give love. God, the word says, is love. And so his love in our hearts, that love that's shed abroad, causes us to see from a different perspective. So I had to really deal with it. Why did I have to go through that? God, you're such a good God. Why did these bad things happen? And people ask me that. Here's always my answer, 4 words. Good God, bad devil. Go on, next. Don't overcomplicate this. There's a real enemy. We live in a fallen world. He comes to steal, kill, and destroy. He's after you. Every day in America, 5,600 teenagers attempt suicide. That most people can't get that. In an arena that seats 12,000 people, that arena would fill up every 2.5 days with teenagers who in the previous 60 hours bought the lie. So here's my question. What does the enemy know about your life that he's so petrified you're going to get into the calling of God on your life that he's doing his best to take you out? God did not need your help getting into this thing called life. He surely does not need your help getting out of it. When it's our time to go, he knows how to get us home. So I look at life from the perspective of, you know, what is it that you're here to do? Because each person today was created on purpose, with purpose, and for purpose. God's intentional. God did not create you and go, oops, Jesus, get over here. You will not believe what I just did. Oh, he created you and went, wow, sunny's in the earth today. And here's the question. My wife taught me this. I share it with students every day. If my hand is a mirror, do you see what God sees when you look in that mirror? Most don't.
Yeah.
But they can, but most don't.
And before we kind of shift gears here, what would you say to the person who's been listening and they relate to your story? Yeah. And as they relate to your story, they specifically hone in on that part where you said, I will never tell anyone this. How would you encourage them today?
Well, that happens mostly to the abuse or whatever starts at a young age. They carry it with them into adulthood. And here's the reality. And it's just going to, I'm not a pastor. This is important to understand. Pastors' jobs are to comfort the afflicted. My job is to afflict people who are comfortable. I get people to think. The reality is broken teenagers become broken adults. And brokenness attracts brokenness. And then when two become one flesh, they recreate what they are. Generational curses or generational blessings. Real simple. So to the person who's there, who goes, who made that vow like I did, I get it. I totally, and it's legit. I mean, it is so legit. Nobody wants to dig this up and go through what, you just don't, until the pain becomes too much. And what does pain do but seek pleasure? And what do hurting people do but hurt others? Oftentimes the people they hurt become themselves. And so the good news is, the Bible calls it, and I don't want to be too over spiritual here, but the Bible calls it's called the healing balm of Gilead. There's a thing in God's presence where you can get healed in such a dramatic, demonstrative way that the pain that is in your life today can be turned and transformed into purpose tomorrow. That, I know that sounds cheesy and whatever, but it's reality. It really is what happens. Because God wasn't taken off guard by your pain. And we have to understand, I mean, people go, well, God's in control. God allows things to happen, but the Bible is very clear. He says, I would that none would perish and go to hell. He does, but yet 53% of the population, if Jesus came today, would go straight to hell. That's not God's will. It's just the choices we make. We live in a world where choices create circumstances. And I have so many teenagers who come to me at the end of assemblies, and adults, when I minister in churches on Sundays, they go, man, your story. I had a lady. I was in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. She was 77 years old, walked up to me, grabbed my elbow. I turned around and went, yes, ma'am. She went, I want to tell you my story. I said, well, ma'am, I want to hear your story. She says, when I was 15, it happened to me. I knew immediately what she was talking about. She says, Dean, you're the first person I've ever told. I'm the first person? 77, 15? You've lived 62 years and have you never told this to anyone? No. She said, I feel a little better. I go, can I ask you why you told me? Well, I just figured you're safe, you know, and plus you're leaving. That's always the answer. I'm the safest guy you'll ever talk to. Goes, I am leaving, going to the next city. So when teenagers come up and tell me that, my first thing is always empathy. But then I share with them, this is for parents. Your teenagers don't necessarily want to talk with you, but they desperately need to be seen and heard. Because if a person does not feel seen or heard, they will buy the lie that their life does not matter. So I encourage, if a student comes up to me afterwards, I never leave that school without getting them help from an adult. I'll find the counselor, I'll find the principal, I'll put them with, you know, if it's a young lady, I'll put her with a female teacher or a counselor or a coach, young man, same thing, young teacher, male teacher. Because the Bible tells us in Proverbs, open communication permits progress. So the kids have enough guts to come tell me their story. They're crying, I'll cry with them. I mean, this is meaningful to us. And I'll go, listen, you had what it took. You had the guts to come talk to me. Let's take it a step further. No, I'll get in trouble. Always the first in it. You're not going to get in trouble. But you've got to learn how to openly communicate. Because here's, you know, Sandy, if you had a trash can right there and you keep putting the trash down, kept pushing the trash down, eventually common sense says the trash is going to overflow. Our hearts are the same way. If we keep pushing the emotions down, there will be a day we will have an emotional eruption, the likes of which I can't even fully describe and I speak for a living. How do I know that? I've experienced it. I've lived it. I've been there. I got that t-shirt. There's nothing fun about it.
So when you just talked about our teens who are struggling to feel seen today, how can a parent help with that?
Yeah, great question. Start asking questions. I have so many parents that I don't know how to talk to my kids. Well, let's start with this. Here's radical. Turn your phones off. I knew that our family was in challenging moments when my son was upstairs in his bedroom and I was downstairs in our family room and he and I were texting each other. Yeah. So we made a change. My wife came up with this. It's very common. It's called the high-low game at dinner. I travel a lot. I speak a lot. And I have since I was doing this before I even got married. So all my family's ever known is what I do. But I always make it a point to be home, you know, multiple times a week for dinner. And so we would sit around our table and Lori would go to our kids. Let's go around the table. What was your high today? They would tell us. Lori would tell them. I would say, this was my high today. What was your low today? What was the worst thing that happened today? And then we'd just gently unpack it. What made that your high today? How did you feel about that? You know, what made it your low today? And again, it's students. I mean, I constantly, as a communicator, I'm listening and watching twice as much as I talk all the time. So if I go to a restaurant on the road, I'm looking and watching. It saddens me to see how many families sit at tables and they're all looking down at their phones. I see husbands and wives looking at their phones and I'm thinking, man, when you were chasing her before you got her to marry you, there ain't no way you'd be sitting there with your telephone. You would be fully engaged in that person and what's going on in her life and vice versa. Because the Bible says all things were created by God and for God. I'm convinced the internet was created, social media was created by God. But it is the most alienating, divisive tool on the planet today. And it's such that the average teenager will spend between 7 and 9 hours a day on their device. Think about that. 7 to 9 hours. And when I ask that question in schools, hands shoot up all over the auditorium. Yep, just try it on. Those numbers are accurate. And it's because they get lost in trying to figure out how to get people to like me. Here's what I tell students. If you're still counting your likes, you have no idea how much you're loved.
Oh, so good. So true. Good. Yeah, so and even for the adults out there who, you know, we have a child inside of us that might still be looking for the likes, right?
We are. I mean, notice I said I've had 169 million views. I don't count the likes. You know why? I can say one thing that people don't like, and they can cancel me today. That is, it's all about teenagers are trying to find their value in what people say about them. How many likes do I have? How many follows do I have? How many retweets do I have? What do they say about this? Do I use this filter? I mean, at one point there was a so-called game showing teenagers how to end their lives, and they were doing it, and we got the phone call. I went to a Native American Indian reservation and I did every school on their reservation. We rearranged weeks of, my schedule's pretty full. We literally took schools and said, we can't be with you today. We've got to go here. And it was just so crushing to see what that had done to that community. Because they buried 3 kids and almost buried 2 more. And it's not, I'm not Superman. I mean, God spoke to this is my wife. Quick little funny story. I had spoken at Liberty University. 7,000 kids gave an invitation, 1,000 came forward. I went backstage to the green room, called my wife, said, 1,000 students just came forward. She said, honey, that's not like God really was there. Yeah, he really showed up. She said, can I remind you of something? I said, sure, anything. She goes, don't ever forget what I'm getting ready to tell you. I said, okay, what? She goes, God spoke to a donkey once. I said, I get it. So this isn't about me as a speaker. It's always the message, not the messenger.
Yeah. And it's good to have people in our lives like your wife that will keep us humble, right?
He keeps me grounded, I promise you.
I think so often when it comes to, I have a teenager, and I think when it comes to parenting teens, we're aware that there is this individuation that happens where they might pull off a little bit from the parenting. And how would you suggest when we recognize that our teen is pulling off like that, and we want to have kind of this balance of, I really want to keep connecting and helping my kid know that they're seen and loved while also ensuring that they can kind of pull off. How do we manage those kind of balances? And is there something that we as parents that maybe we should be alarmed by or things that we should, you know, that maybe are signs that our kids are struggling?
Yeah, if you ask the question, hey, how was school today? Fine. How you doing today? Fine. If all you ever hear is good news, start digging. And I say that because I've seen it so often. It's like our son went to a private prep school, and I'd gone to the same school when I was his age. And, you know, for me, it was 3 hours of homework every day. And every day, you know, I'd pick him up, whatever, after he played football or tennis, whatever. I go, how much homework you got today? Not a lot at all. I'm like, Will, I went here. I mean, that 3 hours, it's only gotten more. And I started digging. And I realized, oh, okay, we have an issue here. And then the switch clicked, and suddenly he got involved, got heavily engaged. All he needed was a little motivation. All he needed was somebody who understood. All he needed was somebody as a parent who would say, hey, let's look at this. Because here's the difference between, I meet a lot of dads, I don't meet a lot of fathers. Big difference. Dads give you what you want. Fathers give you what you need. And so we gave him what he needed, but we also gave him the space to grow and gave him, here was kind of our takeaway for life. With every privilege, there comes a corresponding responsibility. So you want the privilege of having more free time? Prove to me that you can do it. Prove to me that you can stay within these boundaries. And just a couple of days ago, he passed the bar, and he's an attorney today. Well, that's not because we were great parents. It was because God met us as parents. God met him as our son, where he is, where we were, and showed us a way, even in our failures, which we had plenty of, to say, you know what, you can do this. You can. If this is what you want to pursue, and this is what God's calling you to do, then let's figure out what can we do to help support. And so to answer your question, find ways to be supportive of your teenager. Find ways to give them maybe a little increasing boundaries. Find ways to give them more responsibility, because that privilege is going to produce that responsibility. The key, though, in my view, is because I talk with so many teenagers. They're like, I wish my parents would take time with me. Most parents spell love money. Here's some money. Go do whatever you got. Teenagers spell love, T-I-M-E. Well, my kid doesn't want to be around me. They really do. No, they tell me they don't. I know, but they really do. Well, their actions show different because you've not given them an entree into a world where they feel comfortable being themselves. Show them that you love them not because of who they are, but because of whose they are. I mean, I was at a school recently where a young man walked up to me, and I was actually leaving, and our executive director was on the trip. He said, there's one more student you really need to talk to. So I walked over. This young man was just, his jaws were trembling, his eyes were filled with tears, and he goes, he told me, he said one sentence, which I'm not going to say right now, but he said a sentence, and he goes, do I still matter to God? And I looked at him, and I said, yes. You and I can disagree on what you just told me, but you matter to God. And he broke, and he just cried so hard, and he goes, I'm this way because of, and he told me what happened. And I understand. I've heard that story so many times, buddy. And what was he looking for? He was looking for somebody to validate his life does have purpose, even though what he was doing in his life, in his own world, he knew in his mind and in his heart, this isn't what I want to do. This is not how I want to live my life. I don't see my choices. Do I matter? And so I see so many students who have gone through heavy, heavy things in life. And they're trying to figure it out, and they're just teenagers. They don't have the skill sets yet to do that. They don't have the emotional capacity to deal with what they're dealing with. I would hate to be a teenager in today's world, to be honest with you. It's different.
It is, totally different. You even think, and I think that some of them were issues prior, but it seems like with increasing measure, we're seeing more teens struggle with their sexuality, with their gender, with brain chemistry. In that, I mean, how do you speak to teens that are wrestling with one of those things?
Yeah, I tell them the truth. Truth is always true. It never changes. When God created you, like I said, he did so on purpose, with purpose, and for purpose. I mean, there's a plan of God for your life. And, you know, I do a lot of public high schools. And so I can only go as far as that school will allow me to. You know, I don't believe anybody can have authority in their life unless they're under authority. So my first sentence to when I go into a school is, hey, thanks for letting us come to your school. What are my boundaries? How far can I take this message? Because if anybody Googles me, they're going to find out he's a Christian guy, he's a speaker. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But there's in 4,300 events, there's not one school that I could not go back into, because I've always adhered to tell me my boundaries and I stay there. So depending on how far they let me go, that's how far I take the message and really bringing home the message of why you matter. It's why I wrote the book, to let them know this is why you matter. And it talks all about just my stories in the book. I talk about just the reality that your life is you're here on purpose. You're breathing because God gave you his breath. God doesn't waste anything. So when I meet a young person who's really struggling, I can always trace it back to an act that happened in their life. Something happened. And we try to go back and unpack the act, basically. And it's painful, and it's not easy. But the other day I was in a school, and it wasn't, it was an organization that said, I can't come to their, it was an outside organization that said, he can't come to your school, he's a Christian. And the principal actually was a strong believer. He said, no, he's coming to my school. So I got there and I said, let's protect you and me. Record everything I say. Video it, audio, just record it all. He did. And I said, you know, this assembly's coming to an end and I've gone as far as I can go. But if you want to talk, you've got to come to me. I can't come to you. I'm going to go stand over there against that wall. Sonny, students stood in line for over an hour to tell me their story, which again just reveals kids want to be heard.
Yeah.
So to the parents out there, to the counselors out there, to the teachers out there, to whoever's you don't have to have all the answers. Just be willing to listen. The most honest thing I say to a teenager is, I don't know. They would rather hear, I don't know, than me give them some silly, crazy, dreamed up answer that's going to do nothing but bring confusion to them. Mm. I can't tell you how many times I've said, I don't know. I hate that this happened, and I wish it hadn't, and I'd love to try to get you some help, but I just want to be truthful with you. I mean, they're in like glue.
Well, and I love the permission you're giving just all of us that we can say, I don't know. And I think that oftentimes, especially as Christians, we want to immediately quote a Bible verse or control through
right.
the Word of God. But
right.
we're missing that place of your message of just simply, we all want to know that we matter.
Sure.
And we're nearing our time. I could talk to you for hours. I have so much
Likewise.
More I want to ask you. Maybe we'll have to have you back.
Yeah.
But I would just, you know, you talk about us being in a crisis of meaning. And if you could just help, you know, our listeners understand what that is and why this You Matter message might matter for us to carry into the world in light of that.
Well, I believe it does. Because the crisis of meaning the reality of life itself, that so many people are hurting, that they're not, they get up every day, we're talking about adults right now, and they go to a job they don't want to go to, and they hang out with people they don't really want to hang out with, and they're trying to just get from week to week and get to this point where at some point life is going to be full of happiness. Well, the Bible never asks you to be happy. It says you can have full of joy, but not doesn't happiness is an emotion that changes with the weather. Joy is a part of the fruit of the Spirit. So the You Matter message is all about sharing with people that no matter what you've done in your life, a couple nights ago, I was in Dallas, Texas, did a prison, large outdoor event. 600-something men were there. All I did was share my story, tell them that they mattered, I told them why they mattered, and I gave an invitation for salvation. And of the 600 and however many were there, 487 men got born again. I mean, it's simple. It's not a hard message. It's a message that's based on the love of God. And so my thing to adults, to teenagers is, become a carrier of this message. I mean, I wrote the book. Yeah, it's our ministry. But at the end of the day, it's You Matter. I mean, it's just, you matter. And when you look in the mirror, you can smile. Well, you don't know what I've done. Could care less what you've done. I can't change the past. You don't know what I've done. If God will use me, I know He'll use you. Mm-hmm. I'm serious about that. He'll use anybody who's willing. And with my story, and I've only told you what I wanted you to hear. I mean, here's a part of my life that, I mean, I don't want anybody to ever know about, because it's just like, I mean, we all have these places in our lives where we've just fallen so short. But I think that's kind of what makes this message so relatable, because I don't have all the answers. I know who does. I know how to get them, but I don't walk around with all the answers. My answers are real short to the point. God loves you. He's got a plan for your life. And because you're breathing, you matter.
So your book, it is titled You Matter. And if you're listening today and it has you curious, you can go catch up with Dean Sykes at youmatter.us. And you can pick up his book, You Matter, wherever books are sold. And would you say, is that book aimed at teens? Is it something you'd give to a teen in your life? Or is it just a message for everybody?
No, it's a universal message of hope. And I mean, obviously, with what I do with teenagers, we are making it available. I'm actually giving 1 million copies of the book to teenagers. It's the biggest project we've ever had. That's why selling it is so important to adults, because that helps us give it to teenagers. So it's a book for anyone and for everyone. And a lot of adults get it on the weekends when we're out in churches speaking, and we're getting such great responses because it's 104 pages long. You can read it in 45 minutes. If you happen to enjoy how I speak, you'll love how I write. It's just from the heart. It was a pretty easy edit for the people who did the edit on it, because it's just I'm not trying to be something I'm not. I'm just trying to share with a very simple message on a consistent basis. This is what I'll do for the rest of my life. This book, the You Matter book, is our legacy book. If I had died yesterday, this book will live on. And it's got the heartbeat of what we do. So I appreciate so much getting to have a few minutes with you and just kind of share some of the story.
Yeah, Dean, thank you so much for opening up your life, opening up your story. I think you're also showing people what's possible when we submit our life before Christ and we take him at his word. And so I thank you for your time today. I know you have added such value to our listeners' life.
Well, thank you. Likewise, and I so enjoyed getting to be with you.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to today's guest, Dean Sykes, founder of the You Matter movement and author of the book, You Matter. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Rachel Culpepper of American Heritage Girls on Raising Godly Girls.
We kind of boil it down to say that we're faith, service, and fun. And I think that's a really great way to say it. So we keep faith at the center. We're very committed to helping raise up servant leaders. So these girls are out serving in their communities, serving in their families. And then it's just lots of fun. Because if it's not fun, they're not coming back, right?
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.